Our next case is number 004167, Till against SCS Credit Corporation. Ms. Rush.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Annette Rush, and I represent Amy and Lee Till. The Tills have appealed a decision of the United States District Court for the Southern District of Indiana, reversing and remanding a decision of the United States Bankruptcy Court. The United States Bankruptcy Court held, after a hearing on an objection of SCS, a non-prime lender, that the market rate of interest reflected by the prime plus standard on a secured car loan in the Till Chapter 13 bankruptcy case met the standards for confirmation under 1325A5B2, and the decision of this court in Koopman versus Farm Credit Service. The district court reversed this decision, stating that the Koopman's case requires that the bankruptcy court, in a crammed down circumstance, set the rates solely at an interest and at a level that the creditor could have obtained had it foreclosed and reinvested the proceeds in loans of equivalent duration and risk. This is referred to as the forced loan approach to determining a deferred value in a crammed down case in Chapter 13. The issue before this court is whether the district court erred in holding that 1325A5B2 and the holding of the Koopman's case requires the bankruptcy court to apply a creditor-specific test in determining the market rate of interest to apply in a cram down. The debtors believe that the district court misapplied the law in this case. Our position is that the decision of the bankruptcy court was not clearly erroneous on the facts and should be upheld. The Tills filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy in 1999 and listed two secured car loans. These were both non-prime lender loans. One creditor objected, and after a hearing wherein three individuals testified, the bankruptcy court considered 1325A5B2 and the decision in Carson, the decision in Koopman's, and held that Koopman's really did not require a creditor-specific test under the circumstances of this case. The bankruptcy court decisions reflect that the court evaluated the evidence and the testimony of the witnesses and indicated that the prime rate of 8% at the time the case was filed in 1999 was a conventional rate that the bankruptcy court could use. And they applied a risk factor of 1.5%, which was used by the debtors when they filed their case originally.
Well, there was an agreement, I guess, a finding that the value of the truck, wasn't it? There was some kind of a truck.
This was 1991 S10 pickup truck.
The value they determined was $4,000.
The value by agreement was $4,000. SCS's proof of claim, which is on file and off record, showed that the value was $4,000 at the time the case was filed.
And the time the case was filed, $4,500 was owed.
At the time the case was filed, actually the proof of claim showed that it was $4,888.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to get something sorted out here. We're at $4,000. That's the value if he had recovered, or whatever you call it, reclaimed and sold again, that it would have been $4,000. So the question is, what kind of return should he get on that $4,000?
That's the issue. 1325A5B2 and the decisions of this court and other courts hold that a stream of payments must be paid to the creditor to guarantee the claim value over time. And anything more than that, the debtors argue, is inappropriate in Chapter 13. The rash decision goes into valuation, and you are correct. Valuation was not an issue. But I think Judge Weedman's decision in Scott, Northern District of Illinois, 2001 decision that we quoted, shows that rash, the Supreme Court decision in rash, does give the creditor a higher return initially in the determination of value under 506, which is, you know, the creditor gets a higher value under the rash decision, as commentators have noted. So in order to justify and to treat creditors correctly in Chapter 13, the only determination for the time delay in money should be in looking at that claim after it has been valued and making sure that the creditor receives a conventional rate to ensure the receipt of $4,000 in this case.
Well, when you refer to the conventional rate, if Koopman says that the court says that you hold that the creditor is entitled to the rate of interest it could have obtained had it foreclosed, which took the truck back, and reinvested the proceeds in the loan of equivalent duration and risk, testimony I understand before the bankruptcy court was that this would have to be sold to a similar type of buyer, high credit risk. A person that probably didn't have the money and was going to have to pay, so it would be back at that kind of an interest rate, and that's kind of what the district court held. And you're saying that, no, I guess you're interpreting Koopman's as saying whatever, you start with a conventional rate at that time, was that prime 8%?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
And then you add a little bit of a risk factor, 1.5 here, and that would be the return that would be expected. And I just wonder how that really lines up with Koopman.
Koopman's was a Chapter 12 case.
Right.
It was an oversecured real estate loan. We were talking about equity of $100,000, and we were talking about certain elements of 506 on valuation in Koopman's, which is allowed under 506 on oversecured creditor claims. But I don't think that any of the circuit decisions quoted in either of the briefs address applying a fourth loan standard in a Chapter 13 case as it applies to a non-prime lender. And certainly the bankruptcy decisions that are coming out of the Seventh Circuit across the board do not interpret Koopman, the Chapter 12 case, and those standards as requiring only one way of determining a fair deferred value factor in a cram down secured loan situation. And I think, as Judge London points out in his treatise, that if you value the claim a certain way and that claim is allowed, you no longer have these tests of what they're going to get under this circumstance, what the market provides for these particular creditors in the rehabilitative context of Chapter 13. It has never been so held.
Well, I look at the last sentence, in fact, in Koopman. It says, far better to read this cost of capital from newspaper tables based on actual transactions in competitive markets and to reconstruct it in a factual vacuum as an intellectual exercise. I don't know how that ties in with the holding, but it does sort of focus on this particular thing. We're talking about the reality of a market of this particular type of vehicle and the type of people who would buy it in their credit risk when they're analyzing the fair rate. Now, one bankruptcy court apparently said, well, this is a more collectible loan. Does that change things? Would you argue that it's a better risk now that it's under Chapter 13?
We say that I think the argument that Chapter 13 avoids risks altogether. I think that when you have a wage assignment in effect, when you have the trustee that is stepping in to monitor the loan, when you have a fixed amount of money that's going to the creditor, and when specifically 1325A5B. Does not require a creditor-specific test on the stream or the value interest given to ensure a claim. We're no longer talking about the loan. So I would have a problem, I think, in the interpretation of looking at foreclosures and looking at the market outside of Chapter 13 and as it applies to 1325A5B2 in a crammed-down loan situation.
What justification did Professor Russell offer for a risk enhancement of 1.5 percentage points? What's the justification, in other words, for choosing 1.5 percentage points, say, rather than, you know, 2 or 3?
I think Professor Russell's testimony was looking at basically what he saw in the newspapers and articles on used car loans, which was a little bit more, as he testified to, than the new car loan rates.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll now hear from Mr. Smith.
Thank you. The issue of this case is the interest rate that a secured creditor is entitled to in a Chapter 13 plan. The controlling precedent on this issue is clearly the 1996 Seventh Circuit decision of Koopmans. Although Koopmans is a Chapter 12 case, the statute that Koopmans interpreted, at least that section of it, is exactly the same as that section of Chapter 13 statute.
Well, the bankruptcy court essentially followed the prime plus approach that we endorsed as the appropriate formula, if not the exclusive one, in Koopmans. How then can we say that the bankruptcy court erred here?
Because Koopmans, Koopmans made it clear that on the facts of that record, that prime plus 1.5% was the appropriate interest rate. But its holding, when it said that it said we now hold that the creditor is entitled to the rate of interest it could obtain if it were to foreclose and reinvest the proceeds and in similar type loans. Right before that, it specifically said that they are not implying that prime plus is the only way to set that rate of interest, that other markets have other ways of setting interest rates. In the Koopmans case, there were two expert local lenders who testified that were very familiar with the real estate market for farm loans. They testified that the way that banks set those loans is to have a prime rate for its best customers and then to make adjustments upward depending on the credit risk associated with that particular debtor or that particular loan. That's not the way the non-prime market works, at least not the segment of the non-prime market that my client is in. My client makes loans to people that the conventional banking system does not want to touch at any rate of interest. The legal rate maximum in Indiana is 21%. That is the niche market that my client addresses and looks to serve. Everyone that it deals with are basically non-prime customers who cannot go through the conventional system. They have poor credit histories, and as a result, they have to turn to the non-prime market. My client then services that market at the rate of 21% interest.
We have Judge McKinney himself noting that the 21% rate of interest reflects more than the risk of non-payment, but rather reflects the absolutely highest rate that the market will bear. If the contractual rate incorporates more than the risk of non-payment, then isn't it an excessive rate for a bankruptcy court to adopt? Don't we have to take into consideration, you know, why the bankruptcy court, why we have a bankruptcy to begin with?
Well, first of all, there's nothing in the record whatsoever to support that assertion by Judge McKinney. I had two witnesses testify, witnesses that have years of experience in this market, that these credit, that these particular customers are extremely high risk. I think it's a presumption to say that that 21% interest rate reflects more than simply the risk with these particular debtors and the risk that the creditor faces. So I don't think there's anything to support an assertion that 21% overcompensates this debtor. As a matter of fact, a debtor's counselor had indicated earlier that the interest rate should perhaps be lower because these debtors are in bankruptcy. There's specific testimony from two expert witnesses in this case that creditors do not favorably view Chapter 13 bankruptcy proceedings, particularly my type of creditor, the non-prime lender. These are not people, these customers, these debtors are not the type of people typically that have a short-term credit problem, then get back on their feet promptly and can maintain loans with the conventional banking system. These are people that have, in the words of the so-called expert for the debtors, they are singularly risky people. These are people that have a proven record of not paying.
But a number of courts have pointed out that the creditor is protected to a greater degree in the Chapter 13 context than it is in the marketplace. In other words, the risk of nonpayment is lower in the Chapter 13 setting. So what's the justification for the notion that a risk enhancement of more than, say, 1.5% to 3% is justifiable here?
Because the record shows that my clients are usually harmed by Chapter 13 bankruptcy proceedings. There's also literature, one of which I quoted in my brief, that indicates that, and this author was from Texas, and he indicated that he's an attorney, and the clients that he represents are non-prime lenders, that 40% of the Chapter 13 bankruptcy petitions filed with respect to these type of lenders, the creditor never receives a single payment. Oftentimes, the debtor will have the car for 6 months to a year trying to get a plan confirmed. Eventually, the plan is not confirmed, it's dismissed. In the meantime, these non-prime lenders have not received a dime. It is very adverse to the financial health of non-prime lenders for a Chapter 13 bankruptcy to be filed.
Is that the case here?
I beg your pardon?
Is that what we have here?
Yes. And there's nothing wrong with the bankruptcy system. It serves a noble goal. But debtors and debtors' attorneys and trustees, perhaps, and academic scholars may say that the Chapter 13 bankruptcy proceeding protects creditors. But that is not the reality of the situation, particularly with non-prime lenders. As a matter of fact, the Rash decision was brought up. And Justice Ginsburg, in that Rash decision, makes a statement that Chapter 13s are basically very hazardous to the health of lenders, and that even upward adjustments in the interest rates does not often compensate a lender for the risk associated with the Chapter 13. They may serve a useful purpose for society and debtors, but they do not benefit creditors in a typical situation, particularly non-prime lenders. I have really nothing further to say. If anyone has any other questions.
I think not. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Rush, your time had expired, so the court thanks both counsel for their submissions today, and the case will be taken under advisement.